You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome back to Earth Station Trek, a show where we trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my privilege to introduce the Earth Station Trek crew, Keith Johnson.
Hello, all.
Alan Seiler.
How's it going?
And Veronica Daschle.
Hey.
All right, so this week, let's see, we are recording this on February 23rd, and a big announcement came out this week, not pertaining necessarily to the TV shows, but to media tie-in, the whole world of tie-in novels and stuff like that. John Jackson Miller, who is an acquaintance of mine, a really, really nice guy, has written a couple of Star Trek novels recently and just announced his next one, which comes out in August. And it is Rogue Elements. It's a Picard spinoff, and it's about Rios. And it's going to be telling some of the backstory of Rios and the things that happened to him that led up to him meeting Picard. So I think that's going to be really interesting. John, I met, I can't remember the year, years ago. I used to run an annual Doctor Who convention, and he is most known, up until a few years ago, most known as a Star Wars novelist. And our convention used to be on the May 4th weekend, and we were coming up on the 40th anniversary of the first movie. So we had him down to do like a special screening of the first Star Wars movie, and he did all kinds of other things Star Wars related for us. And then a few years ago, kind of got roped into the Star Trek world. He's done a couple of like two or three Discovery novels now, and has his first Picard novel coming out. Great guy, excellent writer. You're gonna really enjoy it. It comes out August 21st, I think it is. So be on the lookout for that.
I was looking at you. You'd mentioned to us before that you know him, and I was looking at what he'd written before, and the Enterprise War,
yes,
which follows Captain Pike's Enterprise basically during the first season of Discovery, like what they were up to before they debuted on the show.
Yep, exactly.
And then also, I think he also wrote the Discovery novel Die Standing, which is like an Emperor Georgiou novel.
Yes, it is.
That I believe introduces the character of San, which she references on the show.
Absolutely.
Which, if they're going to start doing stuff where they're pulling ideas from the books and bringing them into the show, it makes me even more excited to read the books.
Yeah. And who knows what will be set up in his character in this novel that we're going to see play out in season two of Picard.
Absolutely.
Exciting.
I'm sorry, did you say the Enterprise Wars?
The Enterprise War. And it was basically, yeah,
really?
what the Enterprise was doing during the Klingon War.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were sent away from the action.
Yeah.
Right.
And okay. I've got that on Audible now, and I'm not done with it yet, but there's Lurians. There's like Lurian pirates, like Morn species.
Right.
It involves those guys. So it's pretty entertaining so far.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a great guy. And hopefully one day we'll have him on our podcast.
Yeah, that would be fun. Yeah. I'd like to pick his brain.
Absolutely.
And then also in sort of related Star Trek novel or book news, about 10 years or so ago, Nicholas Meyer wrote his sort of Trek memoir, like A View from the Bridge about Star Trek and Hollywood and things like that. But now he's done an audiobook version, which is, by the time this is released, will already be out. I think it's March 2nd is when it's coming out.
Very cool.
And he's reading it. So we get to hear Nicholas Meyer sort of telling his stories of working on Star Trek and probably other things as well.
That's super cool.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Veronica, Nicholas Meyer directed The Wrath of Khan and wrote it, and directed Star Trek VI and co-wrote Star Trek IV. See how people say that awesome. The even-numbered Star Trek movies, those are the ones that Nicholas Meyer was in.
Exactly.
I like 4.
I love 4.
The one with the whales.
Yes.
I love 4.
Star Trek, the one with the whales.
The subtitle they should have gone with.
Right.
The one with the whales. I love it.
Well, we also had some feedback via our Facebook group, which if anyone's not on our Facebook group, it's Earth Station Trek on Facebook. Alan had posted a question on our on our Facebook group, looking for sort of an outro for the show, a tagline for the show, if you will, something that we can, you know, say at the end, something distinctive, which I think is fitting because, you know, we've had Saru and Captain Freeman both trying to find their taglines on the shows this year. So we had a few, I suspect, not entirely serious suggestions, but I thought we would read them anyway. Dave Jones suggests, "To the last I grapple," Khan from Wrath of Khan.
Why not?
Okay.
Let's give that one a test drive at the end of this episode.
Test that one out today. And then award-winning writer Bobby Nash suggested, "I'd give real money if he'd shut up."
Oh, I love that one.
The McCoy quote. So we got a couple of options to go out on the show with. We'll try "To the Last I Grapple with Thee" from Wrath of Khan.
Wow. So is somebody going to do it in a really melodramatic voice?
We could do both. One of us could say, "To the last I grapple with thee." And the other one could be like, "Oh, I wish you'd shut up."
So who volunteers?
Keith, it's all you.
Oh, sure.
I'll do the "I wish he would shut up."
There you go. We got it covered.
Or we could end with "make it go."
I'm going to make you go. No, I'm kidding. Totally kidding.
All right, Keith, you had some Star Trek history for us.
Yeah, looking at the week that the show should drop around March 22nd, week of March 22nd, looking at some stuff that took place related to Star Trek or to technology in that time, one of the things I thought was interesting is I looked at the year, since we're doing a Bashir show episode, I looked at the year that Deep Space Nine premiered, which was in 1993, and then look at what was going on, see if there's anything going on around March 22nd, 1993. And a real interesting thing, March 22nd, 1993 was the debut of the Intel Pentium processor.
Really?
The Intel, for technology. You know, we're all talking about technology with Star Trek. And for those of you old enough to remember this or just into computers, you'll know that the Intel 586 was a huge jump forward in processor technology. There was the 286, the 386, and the 486. The claim to fame of the 586 was that it could do two process threads at once, which means it could be faster than the previous one. And the other thing was it was a whopping 60 megahertz in processing speed. Maybe even 66 megahertz in processing speed, which if you had a phone that was that fast, you'd throw it in the trash nowadays.
Right. But
so it's funny in the show that talks about terabytes and all the other things it can do, gigaquads of information, that was the debut. Another thing that was going on at that time was we had the two series. We were getting ready to really get into a lot of Star Trek. Star Trek: The Next Generation was in its sixth season in March of 1993, and Star Trek The Next Generation, the movie First Generations, was in production. It would be premiering 1 year later in 1994. Also in production at the time was Voyager, which was coming 2 years later. But at that time, you had two Star Trek shows going on, The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and everybody was getting excited about the first Next Generation movie. How you feel about it's a completely different matter. One more thing, March 22nd, 1931, William Shatner was born.
Hey.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
In Montreal, Canada, not in Iowa,
nope.
But a Canadian, hence the word sabotage. We hear so much in the Star Trek shows. And y'all want to guess who else was born on March 22nd?
No.
Any idea?
Who? Nope.
March 22nd, 2233, James Tiberius Kirk was born.
What an amazing coincidence.
I know, because in Riverside, Iowa. So March 22nd has to be the birthday of both William Shatner and James Tiberius Kirk.
What? One of the coincidences.
I can't believe it.
They came up with that when they were writing the character, and they thought, okay, we have to get an actor that has the matching birthday.
Exactly. Isn't that great? And one little thing I did that was kind of funny is I looked up the sign for Shatner and Kirk for zodiac sign would be Aries. The element is fire. The guiding planet is Mars, the planet of war. And some of the traits that they mentioned for someone born under the sign of Aries is an Aries is courageous, determined, confident, enthusiastic, and extremely passionate.
Wow.
They're sometimes negative traits. They can be a little impatient, short-tempered, impulsive and overly aggressive, which
interesting,
you know, that also applies to Kirk.
Yeah.
And the likes of an Aries is Aries like leadership, physical challenges, and being tested as an individual.
Aries. Why do I think of Gorn immediately?
Exactly. Exactly. Does it not fit Kirk and his one-on-one challenges?
Absolutely.
And dislikes for Aries. Aries dislike intensely inactivity, delays, and feeling that they're not being used to their greatest potential.
Ooh, yeah, right. That last one especially.
What does it say about green ladies?
Right. Well, their stone is the ruby, so it would have been great if the stone was the emeralds.
All right.
Aries likes.
Aries is having a diamond. Their
shirt ripped open. What?
What? Aries is a diamond.
Is Aries the diamond?
Yes.
Oh,
misinformation.
The zodiac sign I looked up said ruby, so maybe that's wrong.
That is wrong. I'm right, an Aries.
We'll have to cut
that. Okay, well, you got it then.
Don't argue with her about this, please.
I won't.
All right, Avraka, you wanted to comment on some Star Trek rumors. Is that right?
Yeah, and it was interesting that you brought up William Shatner. This is not like a brand new rumor, but there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks about Star Trek IV, the Kelvin universe. There's been things coming out about Chris Pine's on it, and now Quentin Tarantino is definitely directing it because Chris Pine's on it, and Chris Hemsworth is back on board.
And to be clear, this is not from reputable news sources.
No, this is pure rumor, and I can almost guarantee you not true, because one of the things was, oh, William Shatner's going to come back and take over the legacy spot that Leonard Nimoy had previously had in the Kelvin universe. And not even like 5 days later, William Shatner tweeting, no, clickbait.
So Shatner himself has already come out and said
Shatner
this is not
already
true.
Said this is clickbait. Literally said clickbait. So that is the rumors.
Yeah, it seems like ever since they announced that Kate Mulgrew is coming back as Janeway, it's just this week Sisko's coming back. This way Spaculus coming back. This week Shatner. You know, if you guess them all, you might get one right.
Yeah, exactly right. There has been an awful lot of chatter about Avery Brooks.
Yeah,
I don't see that happening.
It won't, because he's pretty much, you know, dismissed himself from the Trek world. He is a professor. He's happy doing what he's doing. He doesn't feel the need to, you know, re-embrace Trek. So, really? I mean, I think it'd be a great idea, but, you know.
Yeah, he declined even to take part in the DS9 documentary they did. He let them use, you know, footage of him they already had from previous interviews. But I think he said everything he wants to say about Star Trek. And, I mean, as much as I would love to see Sisko back, I don't think that's likely. Now, what I do think might be likelier would be, and if they haven't at least tried or thought about it, they're crazy, would be getting Bacula back.
I think so, too.
Because his NCIS show was just canceled.
Right.
But really, of all the Star Trek captains, the legacy captains, I think he's the fittest to step back into an action role. You know, he's still playing the lead action character on TV shows. Now, he's older now, but what would we think about Bacula coming back?
I would love it.
I would love for Bacula to come back, but I want them to write Archer better.
I love Scott Bakula.
Yes.
I think I spent most of sixth grade pretending that I was Sam Beckett leaped into a sixth grader walking around
awesome.
At school.
That's awesome.
I agree with you. I don't really care for him as Archer, but I would love to have for him and writers to have another stab at that character. I think they wrote Archer too often as sort of the dumb oaf American tourist bumbling around the galaxy. But I would love to see what they could do with an older Archer. Maybe even getting into his political life. Like, there's a lot of options there, the sort of beginnings of the Federation with him.
Mm-hmm. Given Archer's age, if they brought him back, could they plug him into what everybody wanted, which was the Romulan War? Because that was only 10 years, I think, in the future of the series. Has he aged past that? Would he be believable in that?
I think he looks fine. I think that they could fudge that if they wanted to and do a Romulan War with him.
Yeah.
I think he's probably in reality 10 years older than he ought to be for a Romulan War story. But if you've seen him, he looks like Scott Bakula with grayer hair.
Exactly.
You know,
Well, I think he stays in shape for NCIS New Orleans. So
yeah.
Oh yeah, he's in great shape. He's
he like, really is.
I mean, they could go back and do a Romulan war story with him. They could go forward and do a Federation president story with him. There's a lot of options there. So if someone over at Secret Hideout hasn't at least talked about that idea, then they're crazy.
Right.
But yeah, like we say though, these are not news items. These are sort of out of the rumor mill, and there's websites that spend all day long just generating Star Trek rumors. So take all of it with a grain of salt.
Is that a paying gig? Because I could do that.
It is. I need to get into it.
Yellow press.
Here at the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, we make every show from the finest ingredients.
Juicy interviews, fiery film nights, delicious desert island DVDs.
And pack it all into a slice of life in every episode.
Order up our specials now from your delivery guys.
Sean from Canada.
Dan from Kent in the UK.
And Paul from near Liverpool in the UK.
Here on the ESO Network.
The Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Serving you a slice of life.
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, moving on to our discussion topic for the week. Veronica, you suggested this topic, so I'll let you sort of jump in with it.
So I suggested Dr. Bashir. He's probably, for me, I feel like he's the character that had the most growth after Nog. Not just because, like, the first couple of episodes, they were trying to figure out who Bashir was, but you could see a change in him throughout the series, and it progressed over the series, and a lot of the characters did, but I felt like Bashir's was more noticeable than some of the others, with the exception of Nog. So and he's one of my favorite characters. He came to Dragon Con a couple of years ago and he was hilarious. He and Aaron Eisenberg were there, so it was my two favorite DS9 characters at once. It was lovely. But yeah, and then this past week I've been watching every Bashir episode I can manage to squeeze into my time.
Yeah, it's one of the delights of going back and watching early DS9 and watching it through is just seeing how much that character grows over the course of the show. Some characters, like Harry Kim, for instance, in season 1 is Harry Kim in season 7. And that's not necessarily digging his Voyager, because really Miles O'Brien is the same guy from when you meet him and encounter at Farpoint all the way up through the end of DS9. He's just sort of himself. But Bashir changes pretty drastically over 7 years.
What did y'all, Veronica and all, what did y'all think when Bashir was first introduced in the pilot? Did you like him, dislike him? Did he get on your nerves? What was your thoughts about him?
My first DS9 episode was not the first episode.
Okay.
Chuck kind of picked and chose, and it took him a while of playing DS9 in the background while I'm playing my video game on the computer to finally pull me into DS9, because he knew once he got me in there, I would be hooked.
What did you think of early Bashir?
So in general, early Bashir, he was just acting very, very young.
Yeah.
And I feel like he was acting the way a non-experienced ensign would, but he's a doctor. So, yes, this is his first like big gig, but also he's got more experience than a regular ensign would. So an ensign I could see like being all excited like Tendi was, but like he's going to be the doctor of this entire space station and he's excited like this and goofy like this. So it was going back and watching it especially was a little odd, but I liked that they didn't just completely drop it and switch gears. They kind of slowly worked that out where he was more direct, especially after his relationship with Garrick. That definitely changed. I think that was the biggest point where he had some character shift was his relationship with Garrick and understanding Garrick and understanding how Garrick was influencing him.
I loved in the first episode how, as you say, he walks onto the station full of hubris and excitement and sort of childlike wonder, and he just the way that he and Kira just butt heads at the very beginning, where he's like, oh, I'm out here on the frontier gonna be making all these medical discoveries, and she's like, oh yeah, you know, all of us primitive folk out here, you're gonna. I thought their initial relationship was really, really cute.
The other one I remember with the two of them when Bashir was all like, "Oh, I'm so glad that we're not enemies anymore," and Kira's like, "What are you talking about?" And then he keeps talking to her while she's trying to meditate, and he starts going, and she looks like she's about to murder him.
Well, you would if you're stuck with that guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Early Bashir was definitely annoying.
Yeah, and I think you make a very good point. I think it's interesting that he didn't irritate you so much as he made sense, because he was right out of medical school, but we knew even then, before we knew what we found out about his genetic engineering, that he was incredibly smart, if not a genius. But, you know, is that term callow youth? Because in that pilot, he even talks about, "Oh, I'm out here on the frontier, and I could have had my pick of assignments, but I want to get out here with the rough medicine." And to your point, Kira is sitting here going, "My people just got off of decades of an occupation, and this is no joke. You sound like you're playing around, like you're going into an amusement park. This is my life." So you're right. He got on her nerves from the start, because he was making it seem like an adventure. And for Kira, she's like, her point is, "I don't know what the future holds for us." Because remember, at that point, Kira didn't even want the Federation there.
Yeah.
She's like, "I don't want you here." She was all but backstabbing Sisko. And so here comes this guy who was probably the epitome of everything that makes him nervous about the Federation. Like he's viewing it as some grand adventure. And this is a big thing for her. So I agree with you. He was kind of funny. And he was, I think the only thing for me about Bashir, I don't know if his character be written nowadays quite as bad. It's his womanizing and the way he kind of went after women sometimes was a little irritating. I don't know if you would consider it, you know, sexist a lot, but it was really more irritating. But even then it was like he was all thumbs and he didn't know what to do. He was almost like he was playing a role, which is an interesting statement given what we find out.
Yeah, he's overcompensating for his own awkwardness.
Exactly, exactly. And it actually kind of made sense. And I'm so glad that they changed him, though, that he grew.
You're asking about initial impressions. When the show started, I was 12. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was on Star Trek, and I like Star Trek. So there was no bad or good characters or episodes to me. I just liked all of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. The first inclination I got that not everyone felt that way, I was reading, it was probably an article in the Sci-Fi Channel magazine, because that was sort of my go-to magazine at the time. Mm-hmm. And it made a reference to Dr. Bashir's fans, and in parentheses, both of them. And I was like, what do they mean by that?
Oh, wow. But, that's like Harry Kim territory.
Yeah, I never disliked Bashir. Mm-hmm. But now I find it delightful to go back and see him as goofy Bashir, knowing who he becomes. If the show debuted now and I was 40 years old watching it, I think I would probably find him pretty annoying.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that.
Well, speaking of that age range and at the time of life when DS9 debuts, I didn't really find him that annoying. I thought he was very puppyish.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
Like full of energy and sort of bouncing around. And in mm-hmm. particular, with his relationship with O'Brien, which I think is one of the greatest portrayals of friendship across a 7-year span. Because, you know, they really, I mean, he followed O'Brien around as a puppy would, just trying to get under his feet and always wanting to be there. And O'Brien just couldn't stand him.
Mm. Absolutely.
And they end up being best friends by the end. And they're friendship goes through so much. And so I didn't find him annoying necessarily. I thought he was, obviously he needed to settle down, but I loved the enthusiasm. I loved, you know, if I were to have any opportunity in my life to serve in a organization on a post out on the frontier of space, I would be the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when you're young, because you'd be so excited about it.
Yeah.
And I really, speaking of the Bashir and O'Brien relationship, when it came out that Bashir was genetically altered, Miles, he it took him a second, but then he's like, "All right, but you got to stand back an extra 10 feet from the dartboard now."
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I really like how he just went with it. Whereas if he had found that out when he had first met him, he would have like been hiding from him, I think.
Yeah, I agree, because I think Bashir was everything that Miles didn't like, because Miles, as he's always said, he was an enlisted man. Miles didn't want to be an officer, and he was an everyman. And I don't think he knew whether or not Julian was from a privileged background, but he had that cultured British accent. He was a doctor. He bragged and told anybody who would listen how he graduated number two from his medical class, although it should have been number one, except he mistook a preganglionic fiber for a postganglionic nerve and ganglionic nerve. And I think everything about him was just, there was this arrogance and almost a feeling of entitlement. In a lot of ways, I think he was the epitome of what O'Brien didn't like about certain types of people. And it's so funny, you're right, that they become just ridiculously fast friends to the point where, at least the way the show was written, it seemed like Miles wanted him around more than he wanted Keiko around.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, well, can you blame him?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I really do love Keiko, and I just kind of make the jokes for the people listening. I know somebody would. So.
Well, like you said about a lot of characters like Garrett Wong and others, it's not the actor. It was the writing for Keiko, you know, side conversation. But she was just not written very well. And every time she was brought into the show, it was pretty much for a fight. So yeah. you could kind of see why he wanted to be around Bashir more than Keiko, the way she was written.
Yeah, but Keiko was often right, I find, when I watch it now. I thought she was more annoying when I was younger, but now you're watching it like, well, dude, just move your workshop out of the bedroom. What are you doing?
Pick up your socks.
Yeah. But you make a good point about, you know, O'Brien is sort of the working class, older, experienced, enlisted man. And then Bashir is the more upper class young officer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could see those two characters in any war movie. You know, exactly. It could be a World War One movie. You get the same two guys, you know.
Exactly.
So I thought that's a really interesting pairing.
Right. Yeah. Back in the old days, Miles O'Brien would have been played by, for an American, Ernest Borgnine or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Somebody just rolls up his sleeve for Burgess Meredith. Somebody just gets it done.
Yeah.
A question to your point, Veronica, about how he grew more than anybody else. I've always wondered, do y'all think that what made him grow the most, was it the genetic engineering storyline or was it the war? Because he is definitely a different character by the end of the show. If he had never been genetically engineered, do we think he still would have, the character would have grown as much as we all seem to think we all know he grew throughout the series?
I think it was definitely, the war was a big player in that, because I was just actually rewatching it and I'm going to remember the season incorrectly, but I think it wasn't until like season six or the end of five, where that was even announced, or that was when the episode came out and that's when they knew. So this was like kind of nearish the end of the war.
It's a little hard to tell too, because that episode, Dr. Bashir, I presume, where he comes, you know, when you know, Dr. Zimmerman shows up to interview him and all that. That's like right after In Purgatory Shadow and By Inferno's Light. Like, bro, I just got back from a Dominion war camp. Like, give me a couple of weeks to settle back in.
Yeah, that was episode 16 of season 5, Dr. Bashir, I presume.
Yeah.
So halfway through that season. So you think the war was more the thing that changed them than the fact that he was just genetically engineered?
Yeah, the war and his relationship with Bjerik, I think, were the two big things that changed him.
Well, I think they go hand in hand as well, because I mean we know now it's a retcon, but if you watch the show imagining that he's hiding this his whole the entire time on the show, the fact that he loosens up more and shows more of his personality as the show goes on sort of goes hand in hand with the fact that they get involved with this war and he gets captured. And I remember back when it was originally airing, and I would have been 15-ish, 16, which is probably just turned 16. Anyways, and, you know, First Contact had happened, and then a few months later, DS9 got the new uniforms.
Yes.
But then several episodes in, and then you find him in that Dominion camp, and he still has the old uniform, and it was such a mind-blowing moment. Like, it was a great twist.
It really was. I mean, it was one of the best uses of costume change.
Yeah.
In the franchise history.
Yeah, because just what he's wearing tells you that, oh my gosh, they've had a changeling for a month and a half, you know? Yeah. A changeling just delivered the Kira's baby.
Oh yeah, that's funny. Sometimes I need to go back and it would be really fun. And some people have done that, to your point, Charles. Some people have looked at these episodes and really dug into them and go, how did the changeling know all this stuff? Because the changeling was really good. It's almost like they did a mind transfer.
Yeah, it really was. Because I remember asking Chuck at one point was like, so when was he supposed to be switched? And we had looked it up, and there was like a certain episode where this supposedly between this episode is when it happened. And I just like detailed watched the next, like, it was like 3, 4, 5 episodes.
Yeah.
Up until the rescue. And I was like, I don't know how anyone could have even thought it was anyone else. Like, there was too much that he knew that I don't feel
those
like a
changelings are good, man. Those changelings are good.
Yes.
I'm saying they absorb a lot of medical knowledge, evidently. At least that one did.
Well, I'm just glad Dr. Zimmerman didn't come 2 weeks early. And
I did do a bioscan of the changeling. Oh, that would have been awesome, though.
So we've made a few references to his relationship with Garrick. So let's go back a little bit to Bashir and Garrick. Just recently, I guess for Valentine's Day, the StarTrek.com was posted a big, like, who's your favorite Star Trek couple? And I replied with Bashir and Garrick.
I can see that.
Right on.
And I wish that my understanding is that they told him to sort of back off on, because he was very obviously playing Garrick, Andrew Robinson, you know, as if he had more than just a friendship in mind with Bashir. And then right. they sort of stepped in and told him to step that back a bit, and then ended up sort of awkwardly involving him with Zial. But
yeah,
that made so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought that those two, Bashir and Garrick, have such great chemistry together. And I don't know. I just love that relationship. But really, I mean, I love every scene Garrick's in. So
Garrick makes it always interesting because you're never sure how much of what he's saying is the truth and how much is a lie and how much is a
it's all the truth,
random,
especially the lies,
right. Yes. Especially the lies,
especially exactly the lies. Right. And their continuing relationship, even like after the show, because they've started doing their own series where they're playing their characters later on, and yeah, they're recording themselves.
Yeah, that's on Siddig El-Fadil or Alexander Siddig's YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Where they're basically reading fanfic.
Yeah.
And okay, so they're sort of playing their characters on YouTube, which is not in makeup or anything, just sort of reading people's fanfics, which is a lot of, I mean, just great to see those two back, you know, playing their characters again in some capacity.
Was it Armin Shimmerman that was on there?
Yeah, Armin Shimmerman's been on it. The Non-Visitor's been on there. Sarah Lawson's been on there. Yeah. Alexander Siddig knows people. He can get whoever he wants on his YouTube channel to read fanfic with him.
I think one of the things about Garrick, which is interesting, we're talking about how Bashir was just this young, really green Starfleet person. If you think about, if that had been any other Cardassian, if they weren't as quote unquote good as Garrick was, and I put that in quotes because Garrick was still a Cardassian, I mean, you can imagine what they would have done to Bashir, kind of like the guy from Section 31. And because Garrick could have really manipulated Bashir and done some, he could have done some bad stuff. You know, he could have used Bashir. He could have just toyed with Bashir. But because I think he generally liked him, even though he would sometimes make little jokes about how Bashir liked to play at being spy, it's a good thing that Garrick was kind of Cardassian he was, because I could see another Cardassian like Gul Dukat, for example. I could see them just manipulate Bashir in the early days and, like, I don't know, send him on a suicide mission or something. So it's kind of good it was Garrick, because he did grow. You know, he learned. He was still a Starfleet officer, but he learned. They learned from each other. It's kind of like they always say with the whole Star Trek thing is a lot of the other races learn what we call quote unquote humanity. And I think Garrick learned some of that from Bashir, and Bashir learned to be a little bit tougher and a little less naive
and a little less trusting.
Exactly, which he needed to be, because Garrick was always complimenting. He was always criticizing people for being too trusting. And that was one of the things he felt that Bashir needed some hardening.
Well, I think that Bashir could handle himself with Sloan from Section 31 because of his relationship with Garrick.
You know, that's a good point.
That sort of
definitely
primed him for that, which sort of transitioning into that, what do we think about his involvement with Section 31?
That was exciting for me. I remember enjoying that, and it's been a really long time since I've watched those episodes, but I remember enjoying it. Or I may be remembering wrong because you're giving me a weird look.
Who is?
You is.
I'm not even looking at you.
You is. Who that, me? I loved it. And frankly, in my opinion, probably in my personal opinion, I still probably think the best depiction of Section 31. I have issues with Section 31's mm-hmm. usage later on, and I think it's been overdone. But I think him and Sloan, to your point, I never even thought about that before, Chuck, that if he hadn't been kind of seasoned by Garrick, Sloan would have torn him up.
Oh, yeah.
I never even thought about that. That's a very good point, because he was less trusting at that point. I thought Sloan in Section 31 was amazing. One thing I've always wanted to do, it's actually on my schedule list, is shows and plot lines that Gene Roddenberry would have hated. And I know he would have hated Section 31. I mean, we know this because he hated the Undiscovered Country, because mm-hmm. he didn't believe that anybody in the Federation like the Admiral would ever do what he did. So I know that Roddenberry would have just hated Section 31. But I loved it. And I thought the way that it played into Bashir, and the way they were kind of like, yeah, you're this little boy who wants to play at it, but you've got some skills. I thought it was a really good storyline. It was shocking to me at the time, because I didn't expect something like Section 31 to exist in Starfleet. Now, my real life, absolutely it exists. I mean, it's kind of like, as we talk now in this, you know, modern times, we're having all these discussions about Russia and China hacking into our systems. And when you play spy games, you have to say the things you have to say, but the truth is we hack into their systems too. And so I think one of the things that Section 31, while you may not like it, it has to exist even in that time, which may be a horrible statement for me to say, but Section 31 has to exist. And so I love the courage they had for introducing it. And I think bringing Bashir in was an incredible entree into Section 31.
It felt to me at the time, and even now, that it was sort of Deep Space Nine trying to get in on that sort of X-Files conspiracy theory mm-hmm. sort of 90s craze, which I wasn't wild Absolutely. About bringing that into Star Trek. But the thing that's cool about Section 31 to me on DS9 is that you're never 100% certain if there really is a shadowy organization or if it's just this one dude. You know,
exactly. Good point.
It could really just be Sloan on his own.
That's a good point.
And I really like that aspect of it. But yeah, the fact that they've got William Sadler,
yeah,
playing him is just great, because he does a great job. But
yeah,
I liked the where it took Bashir's character, because, like you mm-hmm. say, he went from like the sort of naive, like, oh my gosh, Garrick, talk to me. I think he's a spy, like telling all of his friends and ops. To the end, he's involved in real spy games and having to outmaneuver the spy master, you know?
Which right.
I think it makes a really interesting organic, you know, evolution of that character. I think that's a key with Bashir, is I feel like his character, while he evolved a lot, you know, with maybe few exceptions, they never just flipped a switch. You know, it was always sort of felt like he was growing based on his experiences. Now, with the genetically engineered thing, there was a bit of a switch throwing there, where all of a sudden he's a little more Spock than he used to be. But
that was kind of understandable, though, because he's like, oh, I don't have to
pretend
quite so much.
But for the most part, I think that his growth felt like it was sort of organic and natural growth from his experiences, you know?
Right. Alan, what did you think about Section 31 and Bashir?
I will say that I liked Section 31 a lot, and I think that DS9 is the perfect place for that to be introduced. I don't think that concept could have worked, you know, in TNG or something like that. I think that DS9, which was all about playing with the darkness and the shadow and ambiguity, I think mm-hmm. Section 31 just slotted right in nicely. And I really, it's kind of like you see the origin of it in Enterprise, and they sort of use it almost as a way to, at the very end, try and make Malcolm Reed an interesting character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just not. the difference is, I think that it really works with Bashir.
Yes,
I think that it was an interesting new layer to his character, which was already a great character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it just added new dimensions to him, just like the genetic engineering aspect did. It added new things to his character that just were easily assimilated into the whole package by the writers and by the actor. And I think that Siddig is just a phenomenal actor. And I think I really enjoyed it. I loved it.
Did I understand right that they didn't tell Sadig that he was going to be genetically enhanced until kind of the last minute when they were working on it? I remember reading he said that he didn't know when they first started thinking about it. They didn't tell him at first.
I'm not surprised because famously, there was very little contact between the writers and the actors on those shows, and DS9 in particular. They don't want the writers and actors having too much conversations. Then the actors are giving the writers ideas or trying to get more for their character and that kind of thing, and vice versa with the writers. But I've heard several of the writers say that they had very little contact with the writers or with the actors. You know, they couldn't just come to set.
Yeah. I did read that. I read an interview with him where he said they didn't tell him until almost the last minute. And one of the reasons they said was they didn't want him to start acting, quote unquote, like a genetically engineered being.
Yeah.
And so they slapped it on him at the last minute. And he's like, whoa, what the heck?
From watching it, it seems like they came up with it at the last minute. Because they didn't write a lot of clues in there.
Right on.
Good point. That's true. But, you know, the funny thing to me about here's the weird thing. I think Veronica said it. The weird thing about the genetically engineered plot is it's probably one of the best working retcons I've ever seen, because to your point, you can go back and you can force it to work.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of say that he was goofy and almost bumbling for all his brilliance. And now you can say, oh, he was just trying to cover up for, you know, how smart he was. And then the whole thing about mistaking the pre-ganglionic fiber for a post-ganglionic nerve.
When they don't actually look anywhere near the same.
That's what I heard. Somebody says nobody can make that mistake who knows anything about medicine.
Yeah.
But now one wonders, did he make that mistake on purpose because he was afraid to be number one? Just, you know, he was always, you know, you go just as far, but you don't want to be perfect, because now you realize he spent his entire life hiding the truth of who he was. And actually, like you said, it was created out of nowhere, but you can retcon it where you can make a whole bunch of stuff fit for how he used to act just by thinking, oh, he's a genetically engineered being who's trying to make sure people don't figure him out. He's not showing his full potential. He's acting this way so they don't even come close to getting suspicious, which is an interesting thing that actually kind of worked.
Well, also because distant voices came before the genetic engineering, and that's where it was revealed that he actually did know the difference in the series.
Yeah, that's the one where he's in his own mind and growing old.
Yeah.
And that's right.
And then the guy's in there and he's like, oh, you didn't do this just because you were afraid to be the best.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
But and in a way that was true, because he didn't want to be the best, but he couldn't tell enough couldn't read his mind enough to know why he didn't want to be the best.
Yeah. And to Keith's point as well about, I mean, if you're annoying enough, no one's going to pay too much attention to you because they're actively trying not to pay attention to you.
Good point.
That's a very good point. Yeah. So it actually worked. It's I didn't think it would work, but it always worked for me that, and it's such a fascinating thing, because I would really like to understand more about how genetic engineering is and isn't applied in the world of Starfleet, because I always thought it was an interesting discussion. In modern times, there are these discussions that people who are hard of hearing have, for example. You know, you've probably heard about that some people who are deaf find it insulting to ever think about having, say, cochlear implants where they could hear. And there's this whole big debate in certain communities where they say, I was made this way. Why would I want not to be deaf? And then I always thought it was interesting, because one of the reasons Bashir resented his father so much was part of him was always like, I wasn't good enough for you. And I've looked at the show many times and I keep thinking it wasn't that he wasn't good enough for them, but it wasn't that he was, you know, it wasn't that he wasn't brilliant. He was really slow by other people's definitions. He was truly having true learning disabilities. And I think in a situation like that, I'd want to help my child, but I also see why he can kind of say, why do you just leave me the way I was? You didn't love me. I wasn't good enough. And what a tough discussion. But I think that's a really deep discussion. And it's probably a discussion we're going to have as we go forward and we start having the ability to genetically engineer people.
Yeah.
For example, in my family has propensity for diabetes, type 2 diabetes. And I was talking to a friend of mine once who he is one of those people who's just opposed to touching your body. And I said, look, if you could genetically engineer me where I could eat ice cream and sugar and never worry about it, man, change my genes. Change them tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm good for it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a pretty wrenching episode in Dr. Bashir, I presume, when his mother is trying to justify to him why they did what they did. It's describing watching him falling behind every day and worried that it's something that you did wrong. And sort of the temptation there to just help him catch up, just help him. You know, they want him to be, you want your kid to be the best, you know?
Absolutely.
It's pretty wrenching. And the fact that he viewed Jules Bashir as being dead, like they had killed their son and now he's somebody else, you know, which apparently in the mirror universe, his parents made the same decision because he was, Julian Bashir there too.
Good point. I think that the comment, I forgot about that. That's a great comment where he basically said, you killed that other person. And that's a tough one. Yeah. I think those are discussions in real life we're going to be having as our technology gets better. I don't think his parents did anything wrong, but I can kind of see why he felt they did at the same time.
And on the genetic engineering topic, I really enjoyed his work in the episodes where he was working with his sort of little cadre of genetic misfits.
Yeah.
You know, Jack and them. I enjoyed those characters.
Yes.
They were great.
I was just in the middle of watching the first one of those when it was time to start recording. So I had them fresh in my memory, but I always enjoyed having them on there just because they're like, well, this is obvious. And then some of them are so carefree and they're like, well, I can do this, but they don't because society doesn't accept them at all.
Exactly. Exactly.
Even though they could totally be functioning members of society with their skills, but they're like Bashir was almost in the first season, really annoying.
Well, and socially awkward.
Yep.
And well, a few of them had little sort of violent tendencies as well.
Oh gosh, Jack.
Jack. What was now? I'm blanking out on the white haired guy's name.
Patrick.
Patrick. Yeah. I love Admiral Patrick where he just came in with a Starfleet uniform, and every time someone spoke to him, he said, "That's a stupid question." It got pretty far.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I think that's a good point. I think one thing they did say in the show was, what was it? Was it Julian's parents had a better genetic engineer, or was it they didn't go as far as the other people did? Was that what it was?
I think it was a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think it's this black market stuff, you know? So you're sort of, you're in someone's back room somewhere getting your kid genetically engineered. And it's, I think Bashir probably just got lucky.
Yeah.
And I also think they didn't go as far as some of the others did.
Yeah, because I think of him as it was his overall, well, here we go, that term, intelligence, comprehension. And then mostly it was what his reflexes, hand-eye coordination. Mm-hmm. That was really it. It just seems like he was awkward. It seems like he was slow in thinking and he wasn't very well coordinated. So they didn't give him like super strength or healing factor or super, you know, infrared vision.
He's not
an
X-Man
kind of
now, but he's
exactly
more like a Vulcan, because he sort of was sort of you know, on par with the Vulcans and when they're all playing baseball together.
Right. And I think that Vulcan thing is interesting, because another thing I thought was interesting after the genetic engineering is he showed it more, but he wasn't showing off. Like there was an episode where they were getting ready to go into battle, and it's the awesome episode where they're trying to destroy the Ketracel White facility. And
that's such a great episode.
Remember that when they're going to plant the bomb, and then they can't get away from the facility fast enough. So they're saying, basically they're going to have to go to warp as soon as the bomb blows up. But the force field is still engaged. So if they go too fast, they're going to hit the force field of the facility and blow up. If they go too slow, they're going to get destroyed by the explosion. And Bashir calculates it. And then Varian goes, well, the computer agrees with you. And Garrett goes, well, why not? They're both computers. But I thought it was cool. It's to your point. He does exhibit just a little bit more, not lack of humanity, but he's a little bit more logical. He's a little bit more of a person. He just says, here are the facts, and this is the way it is, because his genetic engineering is out in the open. And I like that change in him, because it made him seem more mature. He didn't become heartless, but he became a different type of person because of that.
Yeah.
And I really liked it when he and the little cadre of genetically enhanced people sort of determined that they should surrender to the Dominion is mathematically their best option. And Sisko was not having that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But it creates a really interesting just sort of sci-fi quandary. It's like, okay, you've done the math and determined that we're better off surrendering now, but you know, who wants to do that?
Yeah.
It's just gonna be one.
I think that's episode Veronica mentioned, the statistical probabilities.
Yeah. Yep.
So what do y'all think about that? About that whole thought of if the math tells you or the facts tell you that that's what you go with?
The facts don't include human ingenuity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't include luck. It doesn't include, you know, inspiration on the moment. Mathematically, you can predict a lot of things, but I would never rely solely on that.
Well, and just like, you know, he hadn't taken, was it Serena? Was the girl, what was the girl's name? The quiet girl who wound up helping Bashir. Yeah. And Jack hadn't taken her into account in his little plan, you know? So if you can miscalculate by just one person, you know, throws off your plan. Well, you're talking about the galaxy, you know, how far off might your calculations be?
It's a very good point. I've forgotten about that. She was an X factor. They hadn't calculated, and she just did.
She did something unexpected.
Yep. Exactly. Right.
That's a good Star Trek story to what you said, Alan, with statistical probabilities, because that is such a Star Trek story, because Star Trek has always been about, do you let the computer take over? Do you let the logic of a race like Vulcans take over? And what Kirk and them have always shown is it's emotion and it's faith and it's the X factor and it's being illogical and irrational that sometimes help you win. So I thought that was a great episode, because to your point, Sisko is basically like, I don't care what the math says, dude, we ain't surrendering. In the story, you can't calculate the human heart and the will to survive and win.
I thought about that episode too recently when they were sort of announcing Discovery, what the storyline was, and it was 1,000 years later, because they had said in that episode that, you know, so one day our descendants will, you know, let's give them a fight. So one day our descendants will know what they're made of. And then you flash forward 1,000 years later when the Federation is recovering from, you know, a cataclysm, and there's a USS Nog there, you know, like he's right. Like we're the heroes of tomorrow. So let's give it our best.
Yeah. That's a very good point. I hadn't even thought about that. Interesting how this stuff can work together.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're about a minute out. Does anyone have any closing thoughts on Bashir?
I want to say that I really liked the circle of Bashir's relationships, starting with Jadzia Dax and then circling back around to Ezri Dax. Mm-hmm. I thought that was appropriate. I was very glad she did not end up with Worf.
Come on.
That was for Jadzia.
I'm glad Jadzia wound up with Worf.
Yes.
Yeah, same here. I agree with that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. That made so much more sense than he and Deanna.
That's true.
All right. So I have one important point about Bashir to make that we haven't brought up yet.
Okay.
And I feel like it is a linchpin in who he is.
Uh-oh.
Season 4, episode 10, Our Man Bashir.
Yeah.
The James Bond show. Pastiche. Yes. Man, I love that episode.
It is so good. It's so much fun.
I love his imaginative side.
Yeah.
I love that he and O'Brien built their whole relationship on going into the holodeck and recreating historical events and just partaking. And I love the fact that he is such, not a child, but he's very boyish.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time that he's growing into becoming, you know, a really prominent and notable doctor, he doesn't lose that playful side of himself.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, that is that's the James Bond episode, right?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. I love it.
That is so good. He and Andrew Robinson, man, that show is so hilarious. You remember when he goes home and Garrett goes, "This is where you live." He goes, "I'm in the wrong spy agency." And you know, Garrick's pointing out all the stuff like, no real spy is going to live in this super expensive penthouse with this, you know, this female assistant and going out. Like, this is not how real spies live. And the whole time he's just completely bemused. What is this all about? Great show.
It works sort of as a connective tissue as well, because you've got Bashir meeting Garrick and being sort of blown away that, you know, he's a spy. And then they're playing spies together on the holodeck halfway through the show. And then later on, Bashir is really, like I said before, going toe-to-toe with real spies.
in
the real world. And sort of, I think ties together that element of his character.
It's a testimony to how elegantly and tightly DS9 was plotted.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like,
that show is just a brilliant show.
And Chuck, to your point about him learning at the end of Our Man Bashir, which was a comedic show, Garak was true to form. Garak was going to shut down the program and kill everybody whose patterns were in the program to save himself. And Bashir, we find out later, tried to kill Garak because he shot him, but he wounded him. And then later on, he admits that he was shooting at Garak, maybe to kill him or to at least seriously wound him. And Garak did that. Doctor, you're learning. I mean, he was basically, that's cool. I get you. You're all right. I don't know if first year Bashir would have done that, but it was like, Garak, I'm going to take you out because you're trying to kill my friends. And it was a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Garak always seemed very impressed when Bashir got one over on him.
Yeah, exactly.
And I almost referenced the time that Bashir was waiting for Garak in the runabout when Garak tried to slip off. But then I remembered that was the changeling.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Oh, good one. Good one. Yeah, sometimes that it makes it hard when you go back and do the retcon makes it a little difficult.
Right. All right. Well, Alan, where can people find more of you on the internet?
Oh, let's see. I'm all over the place. Look for my Facebook group. I mean, my Facebook page for my publishing company, Cosmic Press. It's K-O-Z-M-I-C Press. And find me at cosmicpress.com as well.
How about you, Keith?
Primarily, I'm on Instagram, Twitter, but don't use it much. You can find me mostly on Facebook with all the ESO network groups, which I'm a heavy participant.
Okay. And what about us, Veronica?
Feltnerdy.com.
Yep,
if you like nerdy things and puppets, check us out.
Yeah.
That's... If you like nerdy things and felt.
Yes.
That's right. All right, Keith, you want to try our test outro, test tagline?
I forgot what I was going to say.
Which one was it? I forget which one.
The last
one.
Grapple with thee.
Okay.
Till the last breath I grapple with thee.
I wish he'd just shut up.
You got the quote wrong, but okay.
Okay, whatever. I got the feeling across.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun on our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.